Imagine this. You haven't been feeling well for a few weeks and you decide to go see a doctor. Let's say the doctor's office is in a hospital. You arrive and then you tell the lady at reception that you're here for your appointment, and she takes out your file from one of those light brown cabinet drawers. She then walks you to the doctor's room and puts your file on his table. You take a seat on one of those fancy looking leather chairs as the doctor greets you. You're always taken aback by how stylish the room looks. It's something out of an interior design magazine. The doctor asks you how you are and how they can help you. You tell him that you've had a persistent pain on your lower back, towards the right. It does not feel like muscle pain, but you're not sure. You also have a migraine that feels like a giant is squeezing your head between its fingers, and you've really been struggling with sleep lately. The doctor asks you a few more questions and then asks you to get on the bed in the examination room. They then do the normal physical checks on you, and he asks you if you finished the muscle relaxant and tension medication that he gave you the last time. You say yes, but the pain always comes back after a few hours. The doctor pauses for a moment as you talk. It's almost like they are listening not to just what you're saying, but what you're not saying. After a strangely long silence, the doctor asks you to follow him. On the other side of his office, there is another door, and the both of you walk towards it. He then asks you to take off your shoes. The doctor opens the door and inside is a smaller room. It's almost like a closet space that has been converted. On the walls are ancestral cloths and the room has a potent aroma of imbibe. The doctor takes a lion print cloth and wraps it around his waist, and he drapes a leopard print cloth around his shoulders. As you sit on the floor on a grass mat, the doctor opens your file, and on the first page is a detailed diagram of your family tree. Underneath that are all your clan names from both of your lineages. And the doctor reaches for a bag of bones on the nearby shelves, and then he proceeds to divine your symptoms. After a long contemplative silence examining the bones, he then says what you have is a kind of blockage in your ancestral bloodstream. He takes out a notepad and writes you a referral letter. He gives you a business card of a healer who specializes in river cleansings and tells you to make an appointment with that person. After that, uyakhanyisa for your consultation and the doctor sends you on your way. How feasible is this scenario? I mean, how far away are we from a time when we have a health system where Western medicine is so fully integrated into African spiritual modalities that we trust it to not only heal our physical bodies, but also our spirits? I figured that the best person to speak to on this topic is Nkolo Sianeho, who is not only a medical doctor training to be a cardiothoracic surgeon, but he's also a Sangoma training to become a revolutionary. I'm hoping that the good Dr. Sangoma, as he's affectionately known, will share his insights on how he navigates the realities of these two worlds that seem to be perpetually at war with each other.
Of this particular episode, correct. I want to understand the intersection of Western medicine and African indigenous medicine, but more specifically, I want to understand the psychology with which people in general approach the two, because I think I've seen that people approach it very differently, and in many ways popular opinion is that these are opposing ones and Western medicine is evil, and you know, well, depending on which side you're on, or if you're on the other side, African medicine is evil, you know, and all of those things. But before we get that, I actually like to understand your personal journey. Which one came first, or is being a Sangoma and a doctor the same thing?
I always answered that question by saying I was born a Sangoma and I went to school, I became a medical doctor.
Mm.
F- from a young age, actually a few days after I was born, from what I got from my mother was that my mother gave me a name that was from her side, from the maternal side. And Kalela Libicho, that is what there is a concept, Kasipedi, but Mwana Lela Libicho. I could not sleep, I could not do anything. I was crying the whole night. And then my father, when he came back from work on weekends, my father was coming back on weekends. And then my mother explained that Mwana Harubali. So my father took me to his sangoma, who then they found out that Kitsweruke Mkhalabe from my paternal side, who's my father's grandfather. And that is when then I had to be named, I had to be given his name, not that other name that my mother had given me.
Mm-hmm.
So already from that, you can see that already my path as a sangoma was already set.
Because generally that only happens during Uktwas.
Exactly.
So it happened for you.
For me, it happened when birth. I was a few days old. I did not even recognize myself there.
Mm-hmm.
So already it was, the path was already set.
Mm.
And remember, this is a man who was a sangoma himself, and his wife was also a sangoma, right? And even the name that my mother had given me from her side was of a sangoma who was a great grandmother. Right? Not a problem. So, well, we took that, and after I was given the name, then everything became fine. I was my parents were then told, these are the things you need to get for him, bangles and whatnot and whatnot. Those were the things that my great-grandfather used to use. So the problems I had apparently stopped until I was like 10, 11. I started seeing things of people. I would tell my mother that whosoever would be involved in a car accident, and that would happen. And at some instance, my mother would not even like to go with me to these other places, because I would then get there and start telling bad for, hey man, this and that and that. So then they would think I'm a problematic child, you know. So my mother would not want to go with me to these places. And then those things stopped. I managed to then go through school and finished and even went to university and then graduated and became a medical doctor. Then they resurfaced to say, we had given you a time as your
parents. What drew you to being a doctor, a medical doctor?
I do not know, but I remember the first memory of me wanting to be a doctor was back in, I think I was in grade 9. My mother was diagnosed with osteoarthritis. And because I'm from very deep in the villages, I saw my mother struggle to even get basic pills. So for me, I thought being a doctor meant I would have access to pills, and therefore I would be able to help my mother. I remember then that is when I said I wanted to be a doctor, because all along I had my dreams have been to become a lawyer. But after my mother was diagnosed with osteoarthritis, the whole concept changed. Because remember, for a petty boy, Bomma is a god.
Hey, Banawa Mama.
I understand. You want to do something to help her. So yeah, that's what drawn me to that.
Yeah. And throughout this period in your childhood and teenage years, what was your relationship with indigenous medicine or Bungaka and all of those things?
I hated it.
Mm-hmm.
I hated everything about it. Remember, I'm born in a generation that is a result of a generation that had lost complete touch with itself. Either because batsamaile bathomotlwa magaeng bo bereka ditropong, some went to the townships and whatnot. And education started being very popular, and the churches started being very active. You started seeing a lot of churches, Morikoning, Didende, and then you'd hear a lot of, oh, this is Kema Dimoni. The word Madimoni became a very regular word. So as a result, I was born and grew up in that environment to a certain degree, because now, though I was born from a father who was still very much traditionalist, I was born also from a mother who had run away from her calling, and then she was purely Christian now.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't believe in all these things.
Mm-hmm.
So and as you grow up, then you are taught these things. We are kerekeng, and then these things you are told, or kimoya maybe, you understand, you
mm-hmm.
can't.
Mm-hmm.
So I just like any other ordinary human being, I hated them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you would tell me and you are a friend of mine or you are a girlfriend of mine, I would definitely break up with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe it then begins to show you how one-sided the whole topic has been and how unfair it has been. And you can see the consequences of that, because even the very same people that do not believe in the existence of those, they are currently struggling from those. So as a result, then it then shows you that it does not matter if you believe or you do not.
Mm.
It is there. I always tell my people, I'm like, we did not fall from trees. Even if it was that way, an apple that fell from a tree is here in Pretoria North, and that apple has been exported to the United States of America, still carries the DNA of that tree where it left back in Africa.
Mm.
So you didn't fall from nowhere.
Mm.
You are, if you're saying you are saying that you are a witch yourself, because you carry that in you.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what you say. You can confess with your mouth and do what with your eyes and bath with salt and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
It is encoded in your genetics.
Mm-hmm.
You are a witch. That is what you are. You are a witch.
So then, how did the change come about?
To a certain extent, we must thank the colonizers.
Mm.
Because when the colonizers came, they brought in technology. Their aim, which was to colonize us and to take us away from ourselves,
mm-hmm.
was working.
Mm-hmm.
But it came back, and then it masticated them in the bud. In which sense? In a sense that now we are in that era of information. You are able to access me wherever you are,
mm.
with the very same technology that they brought with the technology they brought. You are able to get me.
Mm.
We are able to have these conversations. This podcast now is going to reach hundreds and hundreds of people.
Mm.
To others, it will spark new conversations.
Mm.
And this is where I think we got the advantage from on our side. Because now we start to see around, and we see that there's great sangomas that are out there, but that are living their dreams, that are medical doctors, that are psychologists. You start to realize that these people are just normal. They are just like you and I. And all these things of saying, hey, ngaka kunga king. Now I was taught to, I never passed by a street sangaka mupilumba, because I was scared.
Mm.
I think deliberately they were making it a deliberate move to scare us off, because why would we all little no harm getting?
Mm.
Is that, does that prove utuba prophet?
Mm.
Does that prove you can read the bones?
Mm.
You understand what I mean? I think they were deliberately just doing that. So right now we are able to see that the paradigm is shifting. You're seeing that sangomas are just ordinary human beings. They bleed too. They have conversations like us. They, you know, that on its own, then it starts to some form of a renaissance of some sort, you know.
And then how did you finally decide, or rather accept, that Tlamilo yo twas
bangisile? Hi bangisa bra. Hi bangshayela bantu. Yeah, you know, I like. I don't want to lie. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that no, it was a passion. No, it was not. It was not bangshaya membra. I lost everything I ever thought I had. Remember, I went Utwasa already after I had finished training, and I was a medical doctor already.
Mm-hmm.
I had accumulated a lot of material things. Part of those were kids and a wife, and you know, beautiful. It was a beautiful scenery. But when they came, they took everything one by one, including cars as well as credit scores. Imagine you're taking even something that was created by technology, a credit score, they took it. And they were like, when I was at a zero and I was at my humblest mode, I knew that I had nothing but myself and them. They were like, okay, good. Now let's start all over. We are going to rebuild, but in our condition. And the first condition is that Melol Puzol Palace.
Why didn't you believe that this was, you mismanaged your funds or you didn't treat your family well? Or why did this come as this is them directing you?
The spirit always knows. Like I said, I have always known I'm a Sangoma. But I was told or taught that I could actually change that path. You understand such things? So I knew. But when all those other things, I tried doing them and it didn't work out and they didn't work out, I always knew where the beginning was. So when all these things were happening, I knew. And the thing is, I took time. I decided myself. I'm like, okay, I need to observe, because luckily enough, I'm somebody who learns through observation. I identified a problem. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna observe how this problem behaves, so that I can then be able to say this is where the problem might be. So in terms of the issues of the finances, I would start being, you know, I would start being financially sound. I would write down everything I needed to do. I would have monies that I know that at the end of the month, after I've done 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, I should be left with so much money. But that wouldn't happen. I would go through statements. But I know this doesn't make sense from a physical paradigm. But in a world where I live, it's very possible that you would go into your bank account and find that the 15,000 is not there, but you can't even account for it. So I was a victim of that. And one moment through this process of knowing, like I'm saying, I think Libona, they got to a point where they were too tired. And then they just decided to come out from me, and then they started showing me, look, you're wasting our time. Because we're seeing you're very hard-headed. You want us to prove that we exist via science. So let's show you. And themselves, then that's when they started showing me a lot of things. I remember I was at work. I started having visions of my own house at work. They're like, call your wife now. She's wearing this and this. She's doing this and this. She's doing this and this. You would call it a moment of madness. And when I called, she was actually confirming those things. And they're like, so, what else do you want to see? And that's when I was like, okay, I think it's okay. Then I had a friend of mine who's a nurse, who I was very comfortable with. Remember, I hated Sangomas. So I'm like, you know what, let me see this one. At least she's a nurse, she's clean, you know.
Most important,
she's clean. Very clean. Asa parle rapo murima muriri. Cool. And so I'm like, yeah, I went to a place. I was observing first the surrounding. Okay, man, okay, ublumanga mokasi, okay, all right, in Kuyabona, okay, utlinika mo. Then I get Kishabagundu meng, Domba Slim, I'm like, okay, cool. Then I'm comfortable. Hagitanaga kwat, just getting in, Badimu Batu. I did not know what is Badimu and how do they zwa, but they did zwa. And then they did speak. You know, they did speak, and then they. And from there, one day at a time, and then eventually, boom,
Was it difficult then coming back from Kolfetlong, having to adjust to the new reality of, because unlike you, a lot of people then have to start from the bottom of the bottom, in that they don't even have a job, their career is gone, and you know, but at least you had a career. How did you then balance, like, work back yourself back into those with your newfound beliefs now?
Yeah. I think for me the most difficult part was going into epic training than when I came out of epic training and going back into the society. Mm-hmm. Because going into epic training for me was number one, get to some makalutu, get a doctor. And worst case bumfa go gaira metric development. I'm chilling there, I'm like, but equally comrades, no, I think we're having a problem here. You know, like, can't you just send me to, you know, whosoever, you know. So at first, the difficulty was that, but okay, good, you know. So once I got in there and then slowly I got used to that lifestyle and I became one with it. Became easy. One thing I'm very grateful for from my ancestors is my confidence. Mm-hmm. I can walk naked if they say I should walk naked, and I would not have a problem with it. So I think them taking me through Lefetlong was them re-stamping their position in my life. Mm-hmm. And then with the fact that they had already given me that confidence, it allowed me to just go back in there and just be myself. Mm-hmm. There's too much room for everyone to be themselves. Mm-hmm. This world is too big. If people are finding it difficult, they will finally readjust. Mm-hmm. I must say it was difficult, but mm-hmm. others readjusted. There were times that I decided, my ancestors told me that, from now on, utoya mereko mwa waperdi pita every day.
And then how was that at work?
It was weird. Mm. It was weird, but...
Like the reception from your colleagues.
Exactly. It was weird, but you must understand that the lucky part on my side is that though I could be a bottom of the food chain at work, I'm not a bottom of the food chain. Mm. Because I'm a medical doctor as it is. You understand what I mean? And that on its own, it means to a certain degree, you've got a level of arrogance you can portray. It's not like you
can leverage.
You understand what I mean? Yeah. It's not like you are dependent on someone to come and say, hey, I don't think you're scaring my customers the way you are. You understand what I mean? Mm. And unlike the others, I'm able to go in, and if you don't want me to see you, I do not see you. I don't lose anything from not seeing you. Instead, you are the one that loses from me seeing you, because I'm the one that can help you with your problem. Mm-hmm. You understand what I mean? So that gave me that leverage. And again, like I said, because we live in the ages of technology and information, in terms of my colleagues, it was a bit easier for them because it's something that they see. It's very common, you know. Mm-hmm. And then that also on its own, it managed to help a lot of those colleagues of mine that were hiding. Because most of them started coming to me like, hey, Mfeto, how do you do? Hey, at the end of the day, I became a pioneer of retained soldiers. I specialize with retained soldiers.
Really?
Yeah. Because now they look at me like, you're able to do it. Okay. Mm-hmm. How do you do it? Because me, I was hiding. And how about what? Bashabu of it, I'm gonna make shabu.
Is it?
Eker Mara Manura is strong. Ligitimomogari 63 until it. Manjisaranj. You know, so yeah. So it's that way.
I wrote down my questions on my phone. So when Charlie just need to.
Not a problem.
Because can I lure Kabu? I fell, and then I didn't ask the questions that I needed to ask.
So, you know, let's talk now about African medicine and indigenous and Western medicine.
Yes.
There's a understanding, because when we talk about bongaka, we are inevitably, I would like to be talking about spirituality. So are all illnesses in the African context have a spiritual basis to them? Because when you go to a doctor, we're not going for, there's nothing spiritual happening
there. No.
You don't expect to be told that, you know, you have this because of, it will always come down to your body.
Yep. Yeah.
And your physical body.
Yep. Then I want to speak about African spirituality to answer that question.
Okay.
Because Ubungoma is but a part of African spirituality. Mm-hmm. African spirituality views a human being as a biopsychosocial being. Mm. And as per African spirituality, if one of these concepts is in, has got an imbalance on itself, then disease will prevail. Then there is a process called disease that comes about. If your biology has got a bit of an imbalance, there's a process that we call homeostasis. If your biology is not, the homeostasis in your biology is not balanced, then a disease comes about. If your psychology, if your psyche is not okay because you are having depression and whatnot, you are, that is going to come and express as a disease. It will come and present with symptomatology, right? So we agree that all these four spheres exist, and then that an imbalance out of all these spheres would then bring about a disease. And that is when you would realize that in African spirituality, then you've got people that are just healers. And within the healers, you've got different types of them. Others are just people of herbs, and you know, that's not what you're asking me. But also within the community, you've got people that do not have those powers of healing. But when we have got social problems, they are there to offer from their knowledge and from their...
Like a counseling.
You understand what I mean? Like a counseling type of a thing. So we had these communities that were complete, you know. And now when you then come into the Western medicine part of it, like you have said, the Western medicine only just concentrate on the fact that this is the physical and that's it. Even though science also agrees that then the spiritual exists, because you've got something that we call a placebo effect, that from the mere fact that we have put in water and put in a colorant and we told you that is for your headache and you drink it and you believe you're going to be healed. But then the problem is that that is not it is not commercially valuable, is it? It's going to be a bit of a problem because now,
because you can't sell it,
because you cannot sell it. Then it means once we master that, then it means I will just come and believe and drink water and I'll be fine. Then the market will fall. So that is where the difference between Ubungoma or African spirituality and the Western medicine comes into play, because Western medicine by its nature is its aim is to commodify, is to make profit, is to make money. So that is why then it would deliberately then not entertain this other aspect of one's self.
But now, and I actually want to speak to this issue of the placebo effects, because it's actually the basis of why I wanted to come talk to you, in that I grew up being told that you have to believe that this medicine is going to work, otherwise it's not going to work. But I can go to Dr. Mang Mang and tell them I have this and this and this, and then whatever, and then I take it, I take one a day, three times a day, and then without the need to believe, you know. So I'm trying to understand, where does this, can't African medicine heal without the concept of belief attached to it? Because if a Panado can kill my headache without me having to believe that a Panado is good, or is it already happening?
It is happening. It is happening. It definitely is happening. You see, the beauty of our science as the indigenous medicine is that I think we're more advanced than Western medicine, actually, in terms of our reasoning. Because what Western medicine is discovering is things we've been practicing all along. And we've always believed in the genetics of whatever substance or compound we were using. If we wanted to achieve a certain action, and that action is on a certain animal, we will speak to that animal that we wanted to kill it, and then we wanted to use it for this specific action of itself. And we would take, we would extract whatever it is that we are extracting on a dead tissue already, that is already dried up and mixed with whatever and we will speak it, we'll speak to it and bring it back to life, but inside you as our patient to achieve that certain action. And that we knew that it was encoded in the genes, but we could not explain it. Now you look at...
So wait, let me try to understand. So what you're saying is that some medicines won't work without you as a healer. Some sort of instructing it.
Yes.
You have to then tell it what to do, like a yes, programmer.
Exactly.
Programming.
Some herbs would not... That is why... Honali, the herbs they do, I can courier them to you. Mara, honali the pegu they do, I can't courier them to you. They want me and you at a specific place, at a specific time, looking at a specific direction, saying specific words. You understand what I mean? Those would not work. And those are the ones that, unfortunately, even no matter how advanced we can be as a science, we would not have those at the shelves, set leaks and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are only practiced a certain healer leading.
Mm-hmm.
And leading that not every healer, even you now as a healer, you can come and teach me those things. I would not even be able to execute those duties.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is what is... It is encoded in your genes. That is why una le batho re re ke ngwana na ka lapula. Even ngwana la ka na pula la ka tla nruta hore how fetlana ka le u dira 1 2 3 1 2 3 pula itlona. Le ka se ne pula eo, because that is not encoded in my genes.
Because it's interesting what you're saying. Sorry. It's interesting how what you're saying, because I'm asking myself, why can't I go to Faraday and find whatever there and say and take it home and I myself tell it and say I want you to cure this? And because I've never heard it from that point of view where you're saying it's not just because a person is a healer, but it's because they are a certain kind of a healer, and I suppose more specifically a certain person themselves who can sort of have that coding.
Exactly. Even within the same family,
mm-hmm.
when your younger brother or your younger sister, the five of you, Ugreloban, you are spiritually gifted.
Mm.
And then you went through the process of Yago Peshwen and you're trained by one healer. You're from the same band. They would not use your gift the way when you can. They cannot command things the way when you can.
Mm-hmm.
That is the beauty of Ubungom.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, it is something that has... That has made us as Sangomas to think we are powerful, because you think, oh, because now I'm able to speak to the water and there is calm. Nagin na mama mama. You don't understand the concept of life itself.
Mm-hmm.
To say even under the very same waters that you are talking about, they are gatekeepers, they are security guards, they are cleaners, they are headsmen, they are advisors to the chief. Their families, each one has a role under those waters.
Mm-hmm.
So each one of us then would be given the responsibility. Our energy, what is encoded in us, would be given the responsibility then to make commands. Some of us speak to moons. I cannot speak to a moon. I can speak to a bird. Mm-hmm. You speak to a... You understand what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
same thing then applies to the concept of giving orders to the herbs that... Or to the pegu. Or do you peta a certain purpose?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
How come this diversity, or should I say the specialization, doesn't come across often? Because as you were saying now, we are very familiar with, you know, healers. There's you. There's a lot of people online and what. But I can't tell. I would never tell a person go to Koko Mang Mang for a specific problem. Pregnancy, or go to Mkulumangmang as a man if you want to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How come that information is not coming out?
And it's very funny, because this is how it used to be back in the day.
Mm.
Right now, when we were growing up, we knew hore how a problem yamunagano yaku ngaka tavadiamed, and then how nyaka star moelur ngunyaka star sa 1 2 3 1 2 3 sabonna. We are going to Ramgul. You understand what I mean?
So there were healers that specialized in mental health.
Yes.
That I've never known before.
There were healers that were specialists in that. And I have noticed something. I need to be honest with you. I've noticed something. Speciality, even in Western medicine, is not something that is easy to attain.
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing applies in African indigenous medicine.
Because it requires more study.
It requires more time. Mm. You then, as time progresses, you find out what you are. That's why I'm saying, or now I've found out, or now I just specialize with returned soldiers. I just specialize with speaking about spirituality. I am a Sangoma. I think I'm more of an African spiritual more than I am of a Sangoma. When I approach my patients, I spend most of my time preaching than actually solving their problems by giving mutis. 40% of the patients that live by my Ndumba, they don't even have herbs with them. All they have is a direction that they I thought they lacked, and then I just needed to just maybe you. I would say I would call myself a wheel aligner. If you would ask me that, because you'd come to me and say, "Ish man, I have a problem. I don't understand." And then Moya will say to me, "Okay, this person kimutom solom so utogwalikwa ask about this." And then as I speak to you, you gradually and slowly find yourself. I don't have answers. You have answers. I just help you get...
Well, you have the right question.
You understand what I mean? I just assist you to get to yourself. Then after that, you realize that, nah, man, I don't actually even need the... You understand what I mean? Actually, all I needed was just for me to understand and see what... Ntwegi utwangye is not a bad thing. It's something that I just need to be able... Is the universe speaking to me? I just need to pay more attention and hear, and then I'll get answers from there.
Now, I'm a person. Yeah? I'm a random person. When I come to you as a medical doctor, and when I come to you now, Mundumbi, do you feel that there's a different psychology involved? Like, do I have the same expectations, or do I have different expectations?
There's absolutely a different psychology. Even if you were to come to me, Mkamo this Ndumba, tomorrow, there would be a different psychology. Bishop Maponga once taught me something about campuses. And then he says that sometimes when he wakes up, he feels like he's a king. Because at that point in time, it is that that lineage that he has to the kings, to royalty, that is at play on that day. And the following day, he wakes up, he feels like, today, man, kukwa gile mpostolo, man. Kanti no, mamu tlare activate le spirit, sela sabo mama sa spostolo. You understand what I'm trying to say with you here? I'm just trying to say that I can't really say, but I know for sure that the psychology is different. I know for sure that when you find me at the hospital, I'm not the same as when you find me here. I can't even control it myself. Even if I wanted to be, I cannot even control it myself. Yeah.
And then when with the patients themselves, because I think in all of us as Black people, all those who believe in African spirituality, I think there's an underlying understanding of African healing being a holistic medicine. In that, haiketla mundumbing, I expect you to correct my life. But when I go to your practice, komsebeti, I want you to heal my headache.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not sure if that is a I don't know, just like a practical way to approach it. Like we expect so much more from African medicine. You know, because you know, I can't find work, money, relationships, you know, but I can't come to you as a medical doctor and say those things and say, I can't keep a job. You know, I'm trying to understand how that mentality either helps the situation or causes complications in people getting healing.
It's very funny. It actually helps the situation, and it's very funny because actually I never looked at it from that perspective, and then I think thank you for showing me that, because then it gives you more reason to then question why have we turned this practice into what it is not? Why have we demonized it so bad? when we know very well that when things are not correct, like you're saying, we come to it and say, I'm afraid, but again, you well. I know I've not been here. I know I've been insulting you all on social media and all, but hey, Buffett, I don't even have the data to buy that day. You understand what I mean? So please, man, help me. I'm still going to go back there and insult you, but hey.
Does it happen a lot?
It does. it does because, you know, you have people, you've got somebody inboxing you and then... complaining about something, and then after that he goes and updates the status about how evil and whatnot and yeah, and then you're just chilling there, and you know, but we've got that ethics, you know, the patient doctor confidentiality. You can't but wait, equally
for
let me just screenshot here. You know, you can't, you just laugh like, but yeah. I'm fit, you know.
Yeah.
But we get that a lot.
Because I'm always curious, especially when it comes to things like rituals, yeah, and the psychological impact of rituals. You know, if I come to you on a Saturday, you know, and then we limit and we go through all of these things, I'm always fascinated by how it activates the brain so much more than if I were to go to, I'm very sick and I go to the hospital for half the day and they're running tests and they're running, you know what I mean? They're not sure what's wrong. They're taking bloods, they x-rays, they're doing this. I don't come out of that as mentally drained, because after whatever or photo, whatever, I need to go sleep. You know, I could go and she has done that 3-hour session. I go straight to bed. I sleep for the whole day, you know. And for me, that's always been what sort of convinces me that there's something more happening in African medicine than is happening in Western medicine. You know, so I was trying to figure out if I'm imagining these things, or are we making it sort of going back to the placebo effect. Is it our belief that is making what is making African medicine work? And if we didn't have that belief,
it. First of all, let me answer the question of the psychology. They use spending 3 hours in a hospital running tests, doing x-rays and that, and you spending 3 hours kundumbing, futa and whatnot. First of all, when you get in here, kamundumbing, you find what we call rebaso. I don't know what you guys call it. And then gilaitilem pep. At that time, when you come into my place, the energy is pure. On its own, the energy is not the energy of battle. It's not the energy of war. It's not the energy of judgment. It's not. Immediately when you get in there, you feel like, I'm not going to judge you for what you have done, for who you are, for feeling what you're feeling. Already you know for a fact that even if you can take off your shoes or you cannot take them off, even if you can sit not uptight, already as it is, the energy that I'm inflicting, that is surrounding me and my place at that time, says to you that you can be yourself. That is not the energy you get when you come to the hospital. When you come to the hospital, you get a whole lot of different energy. You get plus we are angry in our health workers. You find me very angry. And then they already said the other patient, the energy there is not the same. And this energy on this side allows you then to get to that position where you are even able to say, look, I can be able to tell this person that I cheated on my wife. Or I can be able to tell them that I'm about to lose my mortgage.
And somehow I know that's making me sick.
You understand what I mean? And like, I don't know. But I'm not here because I'm hoping that you would make a magic and the bank would stop from repossessing my house. I know that's not what, I know that's not gonna happen. I know that on Monday I'm going to sign those papers and then I'm going to be homeless.
Then what am I there for?
But I know that I'm here.
Yeah.
You know? And I know that when I leave here, you would have given me a solution. And the solution is not because you would have given me 260,000 e-wallet for me to pay that mortgage. And it's very funny, I must be honest with you, that sometimes I don't know what to do myself as a healer. All I do, I just listen. I just lend an ear. And then I advise where I advise, and then we have a talk, we discuss, and then we laugh and whatnot. And then an hour or two later, they're like, you know what? Thank you. I think I needed this.
Is that training something that is given? The counseling?
No, it's something that is lacking. It's something that we are lacking. We lack that because what about Tata Bagul Fetlong Ging, especially Lefetlo Lamajajia? Or let me say Lefetlo in a place where the Gobela is not spiritual. You know, we've got Sangomas that are not spiritual.
That's tragic.
Yeah, we do.
So what are they? How is it that those people can function?
I don't
know. And have schools that I suppose can say who, that prosper.
If you were spiritual, would you want to enhance your gift?
I'm not sure.
If you believed that this gift, the amount of the gift that was given to you is sufficient for the purpose that you are supposed to fulfill here on earth, would you want to enhance your gift? Would I come to you as Vusi and I say, Vusi man, I know of a guy man who are twalis. Would you want to twala and so that you get 15 more clients going to Benyaha? Or so that you get, you would not. If you were spiritual, you would understand that what you are is not because of you. It's because of purpose. And purpose cannot give you something that is insufficient as much as it cannot give you something that is excess.
So that shows that counseling is something that, but it almost seems like common sense. Why wouldn't it be a normal part of learning how to be a healer, counseling? Because this is part of why I think the kereke are prospering, especially for our mothers, in that it is a place where they can go. They go to church for counseling, you know, and not counseling from root, from amongst them, from peers, where they can talk about, you know. So if it's such a, the need for counseling, psychological counseling, is has been so prevalent, why is it that it is, seems to be reducing in schools?
That is why I'm saying the problem begins when we have gobelas that were trained by gobelas that were trained by gobelas that were not spiritual. You know, there is a concept back in the day when we were growing up, I don't remember seeing my grandmothers receiving money from their clients for their services. They would come and makhanyisa badimu for di taola, and then my grandmother would mix this and that and whatnot, and then amulahlela sona mufase are utare how fedije wena watawantebo. You would charge yourself depending on how grave you felt your problem was and how well you thought my grandmother helped you. You could come after 3 days as much as you could come after 30 years. It didn't matter. Does it happen now? How many people do we have now that are a patron?
They don't have bail money.
Exactly like you're saying, they don't have bail money. Why do you not let me go? If you understand the whole concept of spirituality, you'll understand that there's no need of keeping you. I would let you go. Because I know that when you leave and then you've got your own Dumba, you can make a few rents and then you can come and pay me back. But more than anything, I know that I have released one soldier out there to go and help us fight.
Mm-hmm.
But because you think this battle is not that big, you think the battle is just about you getting money, then you hold me hostage. So you even threatened me or hang at my and then you'll make me go crazy. Who the heck are you?
And the next thing you're on a TV show. So now, as a medical doctor, I have expectations of you. Yeah. I come to you, I have this problem. I expect you to fix it. Yeah. There's if I have a headache, I have a flu, I have this, I have this. I expect you, almost without fail, that this is going to be resolved. Should I have the same expectation from you as a healer?
Actually, I think these things are reverse.
Mm.
Actually, they are reverse. And then you are being unfair on us as medical doctors.
Mm.
You are being very unfair.
Is it?
Yeah, no. You should take it to the Sangoma. Not us, please.
Right.
And I'll tell you why. You know, it's very funny. Because I have seen lives being lost that I thought were not going to depart.
Mm.
That sign said, nah, it's not possible that this life would depart. When the SETS monitor says this and the invasive monitoring hemodynamics say this, then it means this person is stable. Then it means therefore this person is able to sustain life. And when this and this does 1, 2, 3, it means this person is about to depart. But I've seen that life, the other one that we said, nah, this will not depart, it departed.
Mm.
And the one that we said was going to depart didn't.
Mm.
It came back, it walked out.
Mm.
On its feet.
Mm.
Science had said, nah, science had ruled them out. So now imagine you came to me and then I used science and I reasoned. I said, no, your wife is going to come out. And then like you're saying, you've got so much respect and faith and whatnot in me. And then you're like, yeah, no, it did. Dr. Sianewa said it. He was wearing a suit.
Mm. He had a stethoscope.
He had a stethoscope on. Nanalichiscope, man, that guy. Now he was smelling of a cologne. Please, how can that man lie? He had this nice sand. That man is intelligent. But I want to be intelligent.
Yeah, I know that.
So, yeah. but then that's the unfairness part of it. Because like we've been saying, now as a medical doctor, I don't go beyond the physical. So you should expect this thing on a sangoma, because he would go beyond the physical. He would go to the spiritual and ask the spirit, are you done? Is your purpose done with Vusi? Is what you were called here to do with Vusi complete? If the answer is yes, then we thank you. You can depart. If the answer is no, then no, you're not leaving. Whatever it is that is trying to take you before it is your time, must just relax. Then we start giving you our things. They start working and you are coming back. And your people are already agreeing with my people. And then, but no, siyavuka manje. Because all you need, we are spiritual beings that depend on energy. We are energy. Energy cannot be destroyed, cannot be recreated, but can change form. So it means my energy. That's why I was explaining the whole concept of coming into my Induma and you find Mpepo and whatnot, and already you feel like everything is going to be fine. Because already I am transferring that energy that I have of me to you. And that is the energy that uplifts you. And then you wake up from that bed.
Does it ever happen that your skill as a healer or your capacity as a healer come into play when you're at the hospital and you have to deal with the patient and your medical training says do this, but no, do this?
It does. And most of the time it failed dismally, because when I'm there, I decide I have a thought that I'm different than when I'm here. And that always comes back and bite me so bad. Because
so you have to tone it down.
Yeah, I try and switch off the Wi-Fi when I'm at work. And then look, if 5G, give 5G, man. Even if you switch it off, it just works. Is it roaming? I think it roams. Because there are times that they would say, we don't think this is what you should do. But the demands are that I should do it as per comerico, or as that somebody must do it, or I'm watching somebody doing something and they say it shouldn't happen that way. Yeah, it does happen. It does. And again, of course, it has happened in the positive sides, because then you would have people that are coming and then governor problem 1, 2, 3. And then they show you that, that's not the problem. And then they just say, maybe say this. You know, sometimes you give somebody hope without thinking you're giving them hope. And then my colleagues would tell you, I'm a very loud doctor at work. I'm a very loud, unprofessional doctor at work. Very loud and very unprofessional. My boss will tell you, he calls me the PR of his department. Because I know everyone. I know my patients. I know where they come from. I know their problems. I know them by name. I know them by heart. Sometimes I even forget their diagnosis. But I know their names. Whereas it's the exact opposite with my colleagues. They don't know you, but they know your diagnosis. You know?
So how would... I'm trying to imagine a future, like a positive future for us as black people, as technology becomes more available, as more information becomes available, and as more people are learning about African spirituality and sort of seeking it out. What I would like to know from you is that how does an integrated African medicinal practice that is integrated with Western medicine look like? What is your hospital, your most ideal hospital?
You know, just when you were arriving, I was going through Facebook and a friend of mine had written an article, Jackie Shandu, he said, and I quote, "Theory changes with time, and as the material condition change, the theory also change, and the practice change. And a science that cannot evolve with time is doomed." It is a reality that colonialism existed, it exists, is still here, and the effects of it are going to be felt, if not until eternity. It is a fact of the matter that we have got interracial relationship as much as intraracial relationship. And through that, we are giving birth to young, beautiful brains, young, beautiful babies that have the best, if not the worst, of either world. Therefore, that means it doesn't matter what you want, what you like. The fact of the matter is that we are going for an integration. That is why today you've got a Sangoma who is a cardiothoracic surgeon who's speaking to you today. You would not have this 50 years ago or 100 years ago. It would have been an impossible dream. It would also have been an impossible dream that you and I would be sitting like this. You are a Sangoma yourself, but yet at the same time you capture stories with this. We would have questioned you and said, "No, But this on its own, it shows you that we are slowly and surely getting into the integration. Our politics and the politics of African spirituality and the practices of African spirituality cannot exist in isolation, because African spirituality is the day-to-day you. So it means whatever affects your external as much as your internal would have an effect on you as being a healer as you are. Therefore, your theory and your practice is going to be shaped by that.
Whose job it is to make sure that change happens? Because we often say government must, the THC must, so and so must.
It's us. Mm. Who is government without us?
Mm.
These changes must come, they come through these interchanges, these conversations that you and I are having.
Mm.
We are slowly teaching each other 1, 2, 3. We are slowly showing each other a different perspective and whatnot and whatnot. This podcast is going to be heard by 100 people.
Mm.
It's going to reach that person. The other person will start asking questions. Mm. Debates will emanate. And this is how change begins. Once we have an organized structure, I loved your example of the church. Our mothers love church, and they do not love church because of any other thing. They love church because of the solace that church provides them.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, amongst peers, when they sit at and then maopela or antiji so on ambona hakilila jwalu, it reminds them of their problems back at home, but they realize that we are not alone.
Mm.
It is the psychology that it offers.
Mm.
So the same thing comes to here, that these conversations that we're having are the ones that would then create an awakening. And then eventually, as time passes by, we need to organize ourselves. We need to organize ourselves and come up with systems that are going to, and come up with curriculums, and then go to government and say, look, we need a curriculum in basic education or higher education. Because it cannot be correct that, I was giving an example, I said, at average, a Sangoma trains for 6 to 8 months, at average. Some goes beyond 8 months to about 2 years or so. After you are done, a month later, you are already a gorilla, you've got your own amateurs.
Mm.
How? What are you going to teach them? I'm not saying that is wrong, but I'm not saying that is right either. But what are you going to teach them? You can teach them herbs, that's true. But like I said, Ubungoma is just about 10% of the whole African spirituality.
Mm.
If you yourself do not grasp and do not even understand the whole concept of spirituality, then how are you going to then pass it to the next person?
So how ideally must it happen?
Ideally, then we must have organized structures like we are saying now. We must have formalized education like we're saying now. We must come to a point where we would, before we even train you as a healer, we have taken you through a concept of African spirituality. Like the same thing that happens with Christianity and churches taking a pastor to a Bible school.
Hmm.
Why do we not have that? You need to understand what you are teaching the people.
So teaching the theory outside of
exactly.
The practical.
Teaching the theory, before we even begin with the practical, I'm sorry. Before we even begin with the practical, you must understand what is idlos. And what is the role of idlosi? And what is the role of God? That is why then you would have people saying, Rena, we worship ancestors. The other one saying this. That's why we have a lot of contradictions. Is because we do not have theory.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to sit down and have theory. And officialize it and teach it. This theory of African spirituality must actually not be, there must not be any person that is excluded from it. An ordinary human being must have a formal understanding. The same way that you and I were learning religious studies back in the day when we were still in school.
Mm.
The theory that I learned when I was in grade 2 about the 12 disciples, I still carry it today.
Mm.
Even though the understanding and the meaning is different because I have evolved, but I still carry that basic understanding.
But now, here's the challenge with modern times and the often individualistic approach to African healing is that I'm going to say to you, your theory is not my theory. What you're saying is different to what my understanding. So the question then is going to become, who writes that textbook?
Okay. I understand what you mean. We must acknowledge our differences as much as we must acknowledge our similarities. Christianity had differences. that is why kind of what is that conference, is it the Nisa or something?
What
was the aim of that conference? What were the problems? What led to that conference? It was the difference that existed amongst the Christians, because there were some that were saying that Jesus Christ cannot be the son of God.
Because that was the Council of Nicaea that was just trying to establish the nature of Jesus.
Exactly. It was because there is a contradiction, and that brings about division. We need to have a sit down, and we need to have a conference, and we need to have to then decide that what are the common goals. Ubungoma has common goals.
There's a more subtler side to this, and I think there's a more dangerous side. If we look at the Council of Nicaea, okay, they come together. However, I think there were 800 of them. I'm not sure how many of them they got together. They decide that this is the thing, and then they send out the communication. They send the email to everyone. Someone somewhere says, "No, I disagree. We are lying, or you are changing, you are distorting." Somehow those voices have disappeared. And I'm asking myself, what will happen when other people's voices have to be drowned out because they don't meet the criteria of what is being said?
You know, to become a doctor in science, to have a PhD in science, you must have read different articles, many articles. You must have been an expert and written an article of your own in a certain subject. And during that process, you must have mentioned and referenced a lot of other doctors and articles. This begins to show you that even in science itself, there are contradictions even today. It also then brings to you that science is not absolute. Still, so why do we want to start being absolute? We are redefining ourselves. We are finding a common ground. So we will argue, we will debate, we will bring forth evidence, we'll bring forth arguments, and we will win each other over, and we'll teach each other. It's very funny that we always talk about the differences, but we cannot even mention them. We cannot even mention them. If one person comes and says, "No, Nabungakabakabu different," and I ask them mention 10 differences, I can tell you they will not even mention 2. It's the same thing as somebody would come today and say, "No, but there is a difference between Western medicine and African medicine." I say mention 2. They will not mention them. So let's do it. And when we get to that point, we mention them. Oh, here are our differences. And then we look at the fundamental differences. Because one thing I can tell you is that Ubungoma, we all have got one origin. I'm going to make a very bold and crazy declaration or a question. And I'm going to ask you to look at that emblem of Western medicine. It has a rod.
And the 2 snakes.
And a snake. What are the significance of those snakes? Why are you dreaming of snakes when Esumungoma? Why are snakes important to us?
From Egypt through all those times.
So where does Western medicine originally come from? So the deeper you go in questioning, the more you realize that, the other person understood it this way or interpreted it that way. But at the end of the day, we all went to the same place. At the end of the day, we're all going to get to the same destination. And until we get into our cars and drive, we'll never get there. But we'll only be questioning on how are we going to get there.
Toby. On the surface, the challenge of having a health system where Western medicine coexists with African spiritual practices, especially in the context of South Africa, seems to be a policy one. Because it seems as though our government tolerates African spiritual healers more than it embraces them. And then there's also a societal reality of our colonial past where African healing modalities have always been demonized. But there's also another side to this. And that is the issue of having a calling versus having a purpose. You would think that the two are one and the same, but our current approach to African spirituality tends to make you think that they are not the same. There are many people who have recognized their ancestral callings, yet they haven't found their unique and individual purpose within it. Personally, I believe that purpose is what you get when you find meaning in your calling. What is even more crucial is that purpose is not the sole domain of those with ancestral callings. It is something that each one of us has to find for ourselves. I believe that every person's purpose in life is inherently spiritual, that your purpose is what your soul is here to do through your physical body in order to reach a higher state of being. We, ordinary everyday people, we are the ones who can determine whether or not an integrated health system can exist. And this can only happen when we acknowledge that the entirety of our very existence is fully integrated into our spiritual selves. My name is Vusum Zinglande. Thank you so very much for joining me on yet another episode of The Journey Kwantu. I wish you courage, I wish you light, and I wish you all the very best on your journey. Makwande.